Why?
Why?
If you
Why?
Have T-Mobile 5G home internet, you might be hearing this
Why?
A lot.
Why?
Every time your internet slows down during the busiest hours.
Why?
Why?
Because your network gives priority to cell phone users.
Why?
Why?
Good question. Why not switch to Cox Internet with 2x faster download speeds than T-Mobile 5G home internet during peak hours?
Okay.
Stop the whys and visit cox.com/5G home for details. T-Mobile prioritizes certain T-Mobile phone users over home internet users during times of congestion.
How powerful is Cox Internet? So powerful that one day, your daughter will be able to simulate a soccer match against some of the world's best players right from your backyard. Get gig speeds powered by fiber from Cox. It's internet built for tomorrow, today. Internet delivered through Cox's hybrid fiber coax network. Speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms and other restrictions apply.
I don't know why, but like my mind was blown because I was always raised thinking you have to do the American dream. You have to like eventually settle down, start a family, do that normal thing. And like, in my mind, I was going to travel for years and go back and like work and grind and like, you know, maybe if made this failed, I'd go work at some tech company. I don't really know. But I was listening to this guy and I was like, damn, there's so many people in the world who have such alternate ways of living. That sounds incredible. Like, I want to go do more of that.
Hey, what's going on, digital nomads and entrepreneurs? How are you doing? Hope you're well. Hope you're healthy. And I'm excited to be back this week with another banger episode of the Nomad Entrepreneur Podcast. And today I had a chat with Neil Parekh. Now, Neil describes himself as a recovering digital nomad, having traveled to over 50 countries in the last 5 years. Now, Neil is based in Los Angeles, California, with his wife. They actually just got married about 3 months ago. So if you're listening, Neil, congratulations, my man. So Neil is the founder of the cleaning franchise Made This. And I'm going to talk about how this all happened in this episode, so stick around for that. Now, before Neil started his Made This journey, Neil worked in private equity. And like most people in the digital nomad community, Neil wanted more. More money, more time, more freedom to travel, to spend with the people most important to him. And he initially tried his hands at a number of online businesses, but he landed ultimately on local cleaning services. And get this, in under 3 years, Made This had become a multi-million dollar business, which then gave birth to the idea of franchising. Now, at the time of recording this episode, Made This has operations in about 8 states in the US, and they are looking to award many more locations in the coming months and years. Now, this type of business is a little out of the norm for most people, but Neil managed to find a way to run the business remotely, which was why he was able to, you know, travel and run the business at the same time. And in our conversation, Neil was kind enough to share how he did it all, you know, the obstacles he encountered along the way, and his advice for anyone who wants to do the same, especially in the blue ocean, you know, blue collar local business sphere. And we also talked about some interesting travel experiences, how he came across his kids from Uganda, who has gone on to become quite popular now. Neil did some interesting funny dances with them, which you can find if you scroll through his Twitter account. And I'm pretty sure if we had more time, we could have, you know, just kept the conversation going. And we also got into some personal stories as well, stories of, you know, happiness, loss, grief. And, you know, we got into some really interesting stuff, which I think you find rewarding to listen to. But I want you to enjoy the little time we spent together. And I hope in the course of this episode, you find something that, you know, resonates with you. So I appreciate your time for coming back on the episode of the podcast and listening to, you know, me talk to this guest. I have a lot of fun doing this episode, and I hope you can feel that in my conversations with the guests that I bring on. And I have a little disclaimer, some confession to make. In the course of recording this episode, I made a rookie mistake. You know, these conversations are conducted virtually over a software. And when I was setting up, I totally forgot to turn on my microphone, but thank God that I was still able to, you know, record using my MacBook Pro, the microphone, my computer microphone, but it's not as great as using a professional studio level microphone, which you're listening to right now. So the audio may not be as crisp, as clear, but I can assure you, you will still be able to, you know, hear everything, but it may not be as crisp as what you're hearing right now. So I just wanted to, you know, set the expectations so you know. But I'm pretty sure that you will forgive me and still manage to enjoy the episode regardless. Anyways, I thank you. And I want to ask you one more thing. Wherever you get your podcast from, I really want to ask that you leave a review. Leave your honest thoughts about this episode. It could be 3, 4, 5 stars. But, you know, I would expect nothing less than 5 star. But I encourage you to leave your honest review. It helps this podcast in search and discoverability. And this is how, you know, podcasts rise to the top. They say the, you know, the cream always rises to the top. And I want this podcast to do well. And your reviews and feedback will help me do that. So wherever you get it from, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Deezer, whatever that is, leave your honest review. I truly appreciate it. Without further ado, let's get right into this episode with my conversation with Neil Parekh. Before that, let's cue the intro. I'll see you on the other side. Welcome to Nomad Entrepreneur, the podcast for digital nomads and remote working entrepreneurs who are living life on their own terms. I'm your host and fellow nomad, Daniel Falonikbe, and I'm excited to bring you conversations with inspiring individuals who are building businesses from anywhere in the world. Each episode, we'll dive into their stories, tips, and strategies for creating a successful and fulfilling location-independent lifestyles. So grab your headphones, kick back, and join me as I explore the freedom and adventure of the nomadic life. Let's get started.
So, welcome to the podcast, Neil. How's it going, man?
Doing well, dude. Doing well. I'm back in my hometown, but you're in Albania, so I'm envious that you're out there traveling right now.
Yeah, I wanted to, you know, ask you to set the scene for me, but I'll go first. So I am in Tirana right now, which is the capital of Albania. I am very close to the Dajti Mountain, which is like the tallest mountain here in the city. They have like the longest cable car in the Balkans. It runs about 12, 13 kilometers. And I can literally look out the window and see the mountains right now. It's so beautiful. So you should probably check it out sometime. So where are you right now? Why are you not traveling? What's going on?
So I, my quick background, I did the nomad thing for 5 years straight. Then COVID happened. Now I still travel around. So 7 years. So I'm currently, I still travel a lot. I guess I would not call myself a digital nomad anymore. I have a home base in Los Angeles. I got married 3 months ago. I'm like a little bit more settled. Oh, wow. Still travel a lot, but definitely different from my nomad days, where I was aggressively traveling. Yeah. So yeah, posted up in Los Angeles at the moment.
Wow, interesting. How was life being married? I hear it's a whole different ballgame on that side.
You said being married?
Yeah.
Wait, was that your question? Honestly?
Yeah. So that was life being married.
Yeah, it feels no different. It's just like, oh, cool. Now I just got the government involved and like, all right, that's kind of it.
Well, that's awesome. I'm just so excited to, you know, get you on the podcast. I'm obviously a big fan of yours. You know, listened to a couple of episodes over the last couple of weeks, and I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to reach out. And I just want to thank you for, you know, taking the time to, you know, to join me, because, you know, being a small podcast, you reach out to a lot of people and they never, you know, not the response you would hope for. Not a shade on anybody, just, you know, putting the, you know, the, you know, just putting it out there. And just thank you for coming, man.
Yeah, man. I'm excited for the podcast.
Awesome. So I have been a big fan of yours on Twitter, obviously, you know, for, I would say, almost a good part of a year. You know, I follow your tweets, and I am a big fan of what you talk about. And it's obviously at the intersection of three things. You talk about, you know, freedom from, you know, conventional lifestyles, say from 9 to 5, for example. You talk about, you know, travel, you know, quite a bit. Of course, you consider yourself like a recovering nomad right now. And obviously you talk about, you know, your business, which is the Make This franchise, which is sort of like an offshoot of the, you know, the made this clothing business itself. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of that I want to get into. But tell me about yourself, your background. I mean, how did you get here? You know, your upbringing. Why business? Why not just, you know, resign to the lifestyle that everybody, you know, preaches, the convenient one, if you will?
Yeah. So I, so my parents immigrated to this country. I was born in the US, but my parents immigrated in the early 80s from India. And they came here with like $100 in their pocket after knowing each other for like a month. You know, my dad's first job was at a 7-Eleven, not even like a 7-Eleven. That'd be way too cliche. It was at a 7-Eleven. And they just grinded and saved and decided to open up video rental stores. So, Dana, do you remember like Blockbusters and like VHS? I don't know how old you are, but like,
yeah,
I don't know if you
actually
went to like video rental stores growing
up. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've heard the story, you know, pre Netflix days. It was the thing.
Yeah, exactly. Dana, how old are you?
I just turned 30.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, you will remember video rental stores. So they had video rental stores and were doing pretty well for a while. And, you know, I have that structured, stable life my parents wanted for me, for my sister and I. And I worked a job in private equity after graduating. And then a little bit after I was working there, my parents still had the video rental stores in the 2010s, meaning not doing that well financially. Mm. We're in a lot of debt. And I just wanted to start a business to help them pay their mortgage. That was essentially it. So I started a lot of stuff, most of which flopped. Most of like traditional like nomad stuff, right? Because I also wanted to quit and travel.
Yeah.
Digital marketing, e-commerce, like selling ebooks, like microblogging, all these things you hear.
Right.
Everything flopped. Then I was finally on Reddit, came across the post of a guy who started a cleaning company. I thought, you know what? Let me give this a shot. And it started working. And I'll go into later on about like why it started working in hindsight. But I figured out how to run this local business remotely. And then in 2015, I quit my job and booked a one-way flight down to South America and started traveling.
That's such a, I mean, what a story. I mean, even myself, I immigrated to the US in late 2016, 2017. So I kind of know what it feels like, you know, being an immigrant. You know, the first couple of years were not, they were never that pretty, at least for everyone that I know. I mean, first you have to deal with being in a new society and trying to understand the culture, the language, the people. It's a whole mess. But you started out, you know, trying all of those different things. Of course, I'm in digital marketing right now and doing fairly well. I have tried a lot of those things that you talk about, you know, trying social media marketing agency, drop shipping, selling ebooks and all those things. And at what point did you realize that, you know, these things are just not going to work out? Maybe I should try something else, like a cleaning business, for example. I mean, that's just totally out of what people, you know, think about when it comes to starting businesses that would allow them the freedom to do the things that would, you know, you would eventually do. Did you think that that was a still idea at the time, or was it something that you just wanted to try, quote unquote?
No, it's a great question. And honestly, it wasn't a conscious thought of like, I'm going to start a cleaning company and make it remote. Like it wasn't like that. I think what most people fall into, especially if you're, let's say you listen to this, you're working a 9-to-5, you want to get out, you're probably going to fall into what I call analysis paralysis. Analysis paralysis is where you're doing a lot of research, you're reading tweets, you listen to podcasts, you're like, I'm going to buy this course and try this out, but you don't really do anything, right? And you feel really productive because you're getting all this information. Unless you actually do something, you're not actually doing anything. That's honestly what happened to me, right? Like I was like doing stuff, e-commerce and stuff. And even when I dabbled in it, it didn't really work. In hindsight, like if I really put my effort in, would it have worked? Probably. I think it would have been a little bit harder. And it just so happens that I kind of fell into like starting a cleaning company because I was like, I don't really care what I start. I'm so pissed at myself. Let me just try something that I actually end up doing. Now, Daniel, in hindsight, the reason why it worked is if you're doing e-commerce, who are you competing against? Everyone in the world. Everyone in the
Everybody.
World. If you do dropshipping, who are you competing against? Everyone in the world. If you're starting a local business, who are you competing against? The small shop down the street. That's it. It's a very localized competition. Now, what people don't realize in the local market is the way technology has moved, how fast it's moved. You can be remote having a local business now. You could have a completely remote team. My team's across 8 different countries right now. You could run it remotely if you pick the right business model. So in reality, because of how fast technology has moved, you get the best of both worlds. Low competition from a local business and competing against the small mom and pop shop down the street. But you could also have this remote lifestyle. Yeah. So it's what I call the remote local method of how do you start a local business but run it remotely. Right. The key is you have to pick the right business model. Not every business model can be a remote local business model. But I realized when I got into local business, it just started to work. Like I flipped on Google Ads one day. I didn't know what I was doing. I flipped it on and we got a sale the first day. And I was like, oh my God, like I was in my corporate building. I ran outside. I started dancing. And like, I didn't realize that the glasses were like see-through glasses, like two ways. So everyone could watch me dancing. But I was so confident. You know? Yeah. And so it just started to grow from there. And it's specifically because the people you're competing against probably don't even pick up their phones. So if you just bring some of this expertise of what you're already doing with digital marketing, e-commerce, dropshipping, whatever, down to the local level, you're a professional football team playing at a high school game, right? You're going to win.
Right, right. Absolutely. Yeah, that's really interesting to hear. And, you know, while talking about that, you kind of, you know, talked about a lot without saying so much. I'm just going to unpack it a little bit. So you went from trying out all those things, you went from, you know, that to, you know, just trying your hands at something different, right? And it sounds like all of a sudden it just took off. But I don't imagine that's the case, right? So walk me back a little bit, the early days. So what was that like, you know, from picking out the idea to setting things up? And, you know, I'm pretty sure like a lot of people who listen to this are people who are either thinking of starting a business or already doing one, or maybe just thinking about pivoting something else in the hopes that it allows them to ultimately have that freedom. But the early days are not as, you know, smooth sailing as it sounds right now. So what was that like for you, at least, you know, in the process of building this business that you have now?
Yeah, it's a lot of trial and error. And you don't really know the opportunities until you actually get into it. And I always say this phrase, which is you can't steer a parked car. If your car is there, you can't really, you can't turn it, right? If you're sitting in a parked car. But once you start a little bit of movement, you can start turning it much more easily, right? Yeah. Same thing with business. Once you actually get going and we started to make our first sales, I could start seeing the opportunities which started to pop up, which I wasn't able to do before from the sidelines.
Absolutely.
So at the beginning, it was really tough to start to get business, right? You're figuring everything out. I was a finance dude. I didn't know how to make a website. I threw together a really crappy website, bought a template, just did that. Try to figure out like, okay, where do I find business now? And I made like a ton of mistakes, tons of mistakes. And I, in hindsight, I kind of wish like I just paid someone for their knowledge, right? Like I was clean as wanted to get paid and I'd be like, hey, just come outside of my corporate building and I'll hand you cash. And then like, of course, like I said, the two-way glasses, everyone sees me handing people cash. So they all thought I was a drug dealer. So that was my nickname around the office is drug dealer because I was just handing people cash. So I didn't know anything I was doing, but I was just online on these forums, like asking people stuff, trying to figure it out. Now I believe there's so many more resources with how much things have advanced where a lot of these things are just mapped out for you. Like you don't need to go scrounging for information. Just honestly pay up for the information. It's there. Someone already has the roadmap to treasure. Why not just pay them for the map, right? It's the same thing. And that's why also I like a lot of these old school businesses because the map to success is already kind of outlined. Like cleaning's been around forever. Someone's figured it out.
Right.
Why reinvent the wheel with starting something new, right? So I guess how I started is not the way I would advise people. I started by trying to figure it out myself. Go on forums, test things, see what works, see what doesn't work, try things out myself and see what breaks.
Yeah.
If I was to go back and tell myself something and be like, dude, just pay a coach, join a system, do something, which will speed up your progress for you. So I don't think I'm the best case study. I think I could have sped up my timeline by like a year or two, at least, if I just didn't try to do all the trial and error myself.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, that's really insightful. And, you know, you talked about, you know, how there is still a lot of, you know, room, especially in the local business, you know, sphere. And when I listened to, you know, one of your episodes, specifically, you know, the last one with the Cowish guy, you know, I sort of get this idea that, you know, we kind of had the same tone as to, you know, how to approach business in terms of like local business and whatnot. Do you still think like there's outside of cleaning, like local businesses, I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to look for an example here. Do you think the opportunity is still there, even if it's not cleaning, but and it's just sort of like any type of local business? Is there like a, can you draw like, is there like an intersection between what you're doing now and some other types of local businesses out there in case someone's out there looking for a different idea so to speak. I mean, what's your assessment of the local business sphere right now? And how can someone, I guess, tap into the blue ocean kind of thing that is going on in there?
Yeah, so I'll talk about two things. One, I know the people listening to this are probably travelers, right? You want to get out. You don't want to be tied to a local business that you have to go into the office for. So I'm specifically going to talk about remote local business models. So what I mean by remote local business is what kind of business is local, but I could run it remotely. Now let's think about a gym or a personal trainer. You can't really run these remotely. You have to go in there. There's like a lot of overhead, a lot of capital expenditures. Maybe you're the main point person. This is not a remote local business. Right. It's local. Yeah. Cause like you're, you know, working out people close by if you're a personal trainer, but it's not really a remote business. So what makes a remote local business? One would be low overhead, low capex, not a ton of investment up front to get equipment, supplies, materials. The second one, the most important, is that labor has to dispatch from their home straight to the job site. You have no office. Mm. You don't have any of this like overhead and supplies where people have to report to. That way things can be done remotely.
Yep.
And the third piece is the key management pieces have to be able to be done remotely. Meaning, let's say the worker has a problem, can they call and can that route to you, or do they have to report to an office, right? As long as those three factors exist, any business model can be done remotely that's local. And I'll get into your question too, which is like, is this tapped out? Which the answer is no, but I'll explain why. But within those parameters, what I've identified, a lot of home services fit the bill. Here's why, because home services is done at the client's home, right? Obviously, I don't need an office space if we're just going to treat the client's home. If you think about mobile car washing, mobile pet grooming, window washing, anything in the home which you look at, locksmith, like my previous co-host of my podcast, who's the owner of Made This Denver, one of my franchisees, he ran 16 locksmith companies, completely remote. He's in Barbados right now. It's local. It's a remote local business because where do you do the service for the locksmith?
Yeah.
You go to the client's home, right? You don't need to have an office space. So there's so many different business models which this could work for. Just look for those three main parameters and that'll outline what exists for that. Daniel, I'll dive into also like why I think it's still blue ocean, but I figured I'd pause. Any questions about that you want me to clarify?
No. I mean, just please go on. This is interesting to me. I'm just going to enjoy it.
Absolutely, man. Daniel, when you moved to the US, what city were you in?
I was in initially in Washington, D.C., then I moved to near Baltimore, Maryland, which is sort of like a 40-minute drive.
Sweet. I'm going to use you as an example to showcase why there's blue ocean in any local business. Washington, D.C., what's the population there? Like 3 million, 2 million, something like that?
Not quite. It's a really small city. I would say under a million.
Perfect.
Or maybe about a million, maybe.
Yeah. So the number of houses there, usually it's like a third of the population. So there's probably about 250 to 300,000 houses there, right? Let's talk about my type of business model, maid service, where we clean houses. An average person might clean their house 1 to 2 times a month. Let's say 2 times a month.
Yeah.
For that type of client we're looking for. So let's say the average price of the cleaning is $150. So that means per home, we're making $300 in revenue for that one property.
Yeah.
Does that follow? Cool. To reach $1 million in my business, I need $84,000 per month, roughly. Cool. So $84,000 per month divided by $300 per property equals 280. I need 280 homes on a recurring basis to reach $1 million in revenue. There's probably 280,000 homes in Washington, D.C. Homes get dirty all the time. People move in, move out all the time.
Right.
There's post-construction work all the time. Like, it's such a small fraction of the pie that you actually need to have a sizable business. People don't realize it.
Absolutely.
Right? So like, people always ask me like, well, there's tons of competitors in my market for cleaning or mobile car washing. Who cares? Like all the competitors know each other. Everyone gives each other business because there's enough business to be had. So I don't think there's ever really blue ocean when it comes to home services, just because people always need it. It's really a question of who markets the best. That's essentially it.
Yeah, that's really awesome. And when you break it down like that, I mean, the reason why I'm smiling, you know, so much is because, I mean, when you break it down the way you just did, it kind of makes sense almost to the point of, I mean, like this sounds dumb almost. Like, why wouldn't anyone, you know, be willing to try this, you know, almost in that sense. And I appreciate you, you know, for sharing that. And so you started out this business, of course, according to information, you know, publicly available, you did almost about $2 million. In what time frame is this? And I like to, you know, talk money just to get people thinking a little bit more. And obviously you transitioned the business in a different direction into franchising, which I want to talk about mm-hmm. as well. Well, let's talk about the money side of things. Like when you go on your Twitter bio right now, it says built $2 million a year business. How fast did that come about? And what did that feel like really when you finally broke that ceiling or finally started to make money with this business that seemed unachievable in the initial days? Talk to me about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And Dan, I'm assuming this experience is like yours too, where the money I remember making the most or I'm the most excited for is the first dollar, the money milestone. That's all I
absolutely. Absolutely.
That was by far the most exciting. Everything after that was sure is exciting, but like
I started my first drop shipping store in 2017. I remember running a $5 ad on Facebook and I made a sale for about I think $7 and it felt like $7 million. I was excited. But go on.
Absolutely, man. And there's a reason for that, right? Like that money, that first dollar signifies you can do this, right? That I can make money online. Mm. I can do things myself. I don't need to work for the man. Like there's a lot of things that first dollar signifies. Nothing's going to beat that ever. Right. So my progression for the business first year, again, I didn't know what I was doing. I think we did $88,000 in revenue. Second full year in business, we hit around $360,000 per year in revenue. So $30,000 a month. That's when I quit my job and I decided to go travel. A year after that, we hit like $950,000. So like 2.5 times the business in the third year. I call it the 2-year jump. I've seen this often happen with my franchises. After 2 years, people just kind of go like skyrocket. Mm. Third year, I think we hit like the year after that, I think it was like 1.5, and then we hit 2 million in 2019, roughly that progression. Wow. So 2 million revenue in 2019, just for my corporate locations, not franchising. And we started franchising in 2020. In 2020, COVID year, only awarded one franchise. Year after that, awarded a second franchise, very slow burn. Again, 2-year rule. Third year, we awarded, we were up to 8 franchises, and now we're up to 15 franchises, 2 corporate locations, and probably going to aim to hit at least 20 franchises this year. So that's been like the upward progression for our business.
Why?
If you have T-Mobile 5G home internet, you might be hearing this a lot.
Why?
Every time your internet slows down during the busiest hours.
Why?
Because your network gives priority to cell phone users.
Why?
Good question. Why not switch to Cox internet with 2x faster download speeds than T-Mobile 5G home internet during peak hours?
Okay.
Stop the whys and visit cox.com/5G home for details. T-Mobile prioritizes certain T-Mobile phone users over home internet users during times of congestion.
Match believes that adults date better because when you date as an adult, you get to be a little irresponsible with really responsible people. Rip the clothes off someone who actually knows how to put them away. Fall stupidly in love with someone who's actually really smart. Forget being hot. Get them to ugly laugh. Ready to crush on someone who makes you feel whole? If you know who you are and what you want in a relationship, Match is the place for you. Adults Wanted. Download the Match app today.
Wow, that's pretty sick, man. I mean, because I mean, when I see franchises and I see, you know, when you talk about franchises, you talk about the big players, right? Talk about McDonald's and, you know, 7-Eleven and all of those big dudes, right? When did you start thinking about transitioning or moving the company in that direction? And was it a decision you made just because, like, I mean, I guess I'll put it this way. What was the thought process like when you were thinking about moving in that direction? And how confident were you that this was going to be, you know, the future, that this was going to work out to start with?
Yeah, I'll answer the last question. I wasn't confident at all. I was like, let's try this out and see what happens. It was 2019 and I was like, what is the growth avenue? I could try to keep growing my LA location. I could try to expand to more locations. And someone said, hey, why don't you consider franchising? Not the franchising. That's like my parents do. You get like a Subway or McDonald's and like a very old school type of way. Like, no, like, I'm a nomad. Like, I'm a new kid.
Right.
Like, we're the new rich. I'm not going to franchise. Then the more and more I looked into it, I thought, you know, maybe this is a good way of scaling. And here's the reason why. I could go open up multiple locations. There's a lot of people to manage per location, right? It's a people intensive business. And I knew that was stressful for me.
Right.
So I thought, look, if I have 20 locations, this is going to be rough. So I said, I don't want to expand that way. So honestly, the only other way I thought about expanding was franchising. There's a lot of different ways of doing it. I feel like no matter which way I did it, you could make it work, right? Like, again, the path is set in front of you. You're not reinventing the wheel. Like, I'm not making Facebook. Like, franchising has been done before. Expanding without franchising has been done before. So I just happened to decide on franchising. And like, until like last year, I wasn't sure it was the right decision. Just because I see, you know how it is, Andy. You see people online and you're like, all these guys are crushing it, selling courses, info products. And here I'm franchising. I have two franchisees after like $100,000 invested in this. Like, is this really worth it? But I kind of just stuck with it and kept going. And after a while, it started to grow. And now I love it because we have a good amount of franchisees. They're all awesome. I just love taking care of them, making sure they're doing what they need to do and building like the most badass support system around them. So in short, I didn't know if this was the right growth avenue, but I don't think you really need to know. Again, you can't steer a parked car. You just got to start moving and then see what pivots you want to make after that.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And you kind of mentioned something there where you talked about, because when I've seen a couple of YouTube videos about, you know, people starting like, you know, window cleaning businesses, and you just go on YouTube, start documenting in the hopes of teaching it to other people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And did you ever think about going that path? Like, oh, let me create like an info product and just teach this to other people. I guess that would be an easier way to do it. Why? I mean, if you thought about it, why didn't you do it? And if, I mean, did you just feel like it wasn't something that you were in tune with? Or what was the decision process like? Because I know you must have thought about it at some point, right?
You know, kind of. But like, I truly, at the time, I didn't realize how big info products could scale or coaching. And, you know, in hindsight, I think that would have been a good avenue to grow. However, I was just kind of turned off by like gurus online, info products online. Like, I didn't want to be a guru. Just because I always found them so cringy.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, in hindsight, I think I was being probably a little bit too judgmental about the industry. I think that would be a fantastic avenue of growth as well. And honestly, it's very similar to what I'm doing with franchising. I'm selling information with a great support system on the back end using my Maldon brand. With the info product, it's somewhat similar. Like, I think if I was to do it, I wouldn't just do like, here's a course, buy it and do it yourself. I'd probably say, here's all the cool stuff I'm doing for you as well. But my mindset of like info products was, like what you see on the Digital Nomad circuit, like buy my ebook for $49 and I will teach you how to start a microblog. And I was just like, I don't want to do that. So I truly think in hindsight, that would have been a great avenue for growth. I just didn't even think about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty honest. And I kind of feel the same way as well, because in 2019, 2020, that was when I, you know, first started to get some momentum online, especially on YouTube. Because I've been trying my hands on dropshipping for a while and nothing was working. I was, you know, spending tons and tons of money running ads, and I was just like fall short every single time. Then I started looking at this because Facebook had just come out with this Facebook marketplace during COVID. Then, you know, everybody had to shut down the marketplaces because you couldn't, you know, interface with people physically. And I thought, you know what? We can dropship, right? You dropshipping, the old concept of dropshipping is the same. Find a product for a cheaper price, put the picture up. When people show interest, they give you the, you know, the shipping address and you ship it to them. And Facebook was starting to play around with this idea of shipping items to people in their homes rather than coming to your home and getting the product. So I thought, if I could apply the same concept of dropshipping to Facebook, it's still dropshipping, but just in a different way. Now I gain audience, I gain traffic organically, and I can still do the same thing. So I started just playing around with it. And in the first, I would say in the first 15 minutes of listing my first product, I got a sale. It was like magic. It was like,
and this is locally,
I had never seen any. No, this was drop shipping. Like, I put the picture up. I grabbed the picture from Amazon. I put it on Facebook, and someone bought it for about 70% more than I found it for. And I was like, this is insane. This is stupid. Then I did more and I did more and I did more. And I, before the week ran out, I made probably a profit of about $900. And the first video I did, I just record a video just showing people how to, you know, how to list your first product on Facebook Marketplace. And that video on my old channel is the most viewed video ever. And over the next 2 months, I gained over 1,000 subscribers. I made a video about it on TikTok, got over 1.5 million views. And people were asking me, like, I mean, you need to teach me this, like, make a course, blah, blah, blah. But what I didn't know was the week prior to that, the months prior to that, I would say about 2 months before that, I paid a guru about $5,000 for like a one-on-one mentorship for dropshipping, and they just never showed up. Like, they sent their assistant to delete, they sent me some PDFs, and it was the most generic thing ever, and they never showed up to one call. And it was with that animosity that I had, you know, for gurus. So I put out a video on my YouTube channel at the time. I say, you know what? I am never going to create a course. I am going to put out everything I know for free on this channel. Do with it whatever you want and just see how it goes. And I was pretty satisfied with that. And people who booked a call with me, like a one-on-one call, they went on to create courses and they made a shit ton of money. And in hindsight, I'm thinking to myself, was that a good decision or a poor one? But when I look back, I'm just like, you know what? I did what I felt was right in my mind, and I don't think I have any regrets. So that's just I just wanted to share that story just to, you know.
Very same thing.
Just to let you know how similar they are.
Absolutely, man. And it's also one of those things where, like, this is not going to be your first ever business endeavor. It won't be my last for what I'm doing. The next one, you might decide, I've learned from my first one. Now I decide I want to offer a program or course around it, right? But you don't always have
Absolutely. And I'm currently doing that. Like, I don't still think I'm a guru. I come from a place of, like, you know, honesty in everything I do. I went on to create a second channel, which is growing, in a similar pace. And I offer a membership right now where people can tap into my knowledge, and I just teach from everything I know. So I don't think, you know, there's a one size fits all, you know, solution into this thing. So, but when you were talking, one thing, I mean, I had a curiosity about something. When you were started seeing all of this initial, you know, progress, how old were you then?
So, started the business 10 years ago, which is insane. I was 24. So I was 24 years old when I first started. I did it for 2 years part-time. So when I quit my job, I was 26. So I was working in private equity and finance for 4 years total, two years until I started my side hustle.
Wow, that's crazy. I just was curious about that because, you know, people think probably you need to, you know, be older or maybe like have a few years behind you before you can start, you know, business like you have right now. So let's, you know, move on to the freedom that came afterwards. You started making all this money, you quit your job, and it's still pretty amazing to me that you waited 2 years to quit your job, which is, you know, a story for another day. So you decided to quit your job and you started traveling. And how was that like? Was it all that was propped up to be, you know, freedom and, you know, traveling, buying tickets and, you know, staying in the best locations and whatnot? What was that freedom like initially or subsequently as well?
Yeah, you know, it was, I think most people who, maybe if you're in your 20s, like maybe not everyone has experience. I was staying in hostels mostly and working. I loved it, right? Because there's so many fascinating people, like all people from different walks of life. You're like, this is incredible. And look, I was planning to travel for a year. And Daniel, I remember this story. I was sitting outside of a cafe in Ecuador, in Quito, Ecuador. And I was just like enjoying a beer, bright sunny day. And this guy bikes in front of me. And he has a penny farthing bike. A penny farthing bike is one of those bikes with big front wheel and small back wheel. And he bikes and he parks next to me and he sits down. So I was just like, hey, what's up, dude? And we just get to talking. And turns out he had been biking for 2 years straight. Started in Canada, made his way down to South America where I was traveling at the beginning. And he just kept going. And I remember her asking him, I said, like, well, like, what do you do for work? Like, don't you have to get a job and like kind of do your thing? And he said, no, I just like kind of fix bikes as I need to. I thought, all right, well, like, don't you want to start a family and like do that kind of thing? He said, no, I'm just kind of happy like doing what I want to do. And I don't know why, but like my mind was blown because I was always raised thinking you have to do the American dream. You have to like eventually settle down, start a family, do that normal thing. And like, In my mind, I was going to travel for youth and go back and like work and grind and like, you know, maybe if made this failed, I'd go work at some tech company. I don't really know. But I was listening to this guy and I was like, damn, there's so many people in the world who have such alternate ways of living. That sounds incredible. Like, I want to go do more of that. And so after I spoke with the guy and I was reaching the end of my year of travel, I thought, you know, I'm going to just keep going because I'm loving this so much. Like, why do I need to stop just to like make money? So I kept going. And that was, you know, the first few months I spent mostly in South America. My business is based in Los Angeles. So I couldn't do Thailand. I couldn't do weird time zones. It was mostly Latin America I was in.
Right.
And eventually, as the business scaled, I brought in key employees. I was able to do Europe, Africa, then finally Asia, and kind of move forward with the timeline. And then, yeah, that was 7 years of travel.
That's awesome. I mean, so far, you've visited about 50 countries, and I recently saw a video of yours, like, on a bike, I think somewhere in Uganda, maybe, just like, dancing with some random kids, and I thought that was really cool. What's the story behind that?
Yeah, I did a motorcycle trip last year in East Africa. So I went through Rwanda and up into Uganda, and also with my now wife, my girlfriend at the time, and we stopped at an orphanage over there, which is like, these kids have blown up on TikTok, Instagram, everywhere. So we stopped by on the way in Uganda and hung out with them for 4 days. They taught me dancing. They're like way, way better than I am. I had some like pretty cool dance videos with them. It was really, really fun. Dano, I think I saw that you were in Africa recently too, right?
Yeah, I mean, so I moved to the US and obviously, you know, the 2016-17, but then I didn't go back until 2021. Because, you know, my residency, I had to, went through a whole lot of, you know, long legal process to get it sorted out. So it took about 5 years of my life just dealing with that. And, you know, I went back in 2021 for the first time, to visit my family and to Nigeria. That's where I'm from. I was born in Lagos, Nigeria, but grew up in a small little town about 3 hours from Lagos. Back, I think about, it's kind of like popping up everywhere right now. I think it's, you know, getting the much deserved attention because, you know, our guys are really, you know, they are hard workers, man. And I think, you know, Afrobeats being everywhere. And I just go to a random coffee shop here in Albania and I just hear like this guy from the same university that I went to. I'm just like, what the heck? Like, this is so cool, man. And I just like eat up some of my, some of my friends, like, do you hear this? Like, I made a recording. I was like, send this to him because me and him don't, you know, talk as much. It's like, send this to him if you still talk. This is so cool. But yeah, I mean, I've been back, you know, 4 times since, and now I just love to spend more time in, you know, back home and just, you know, attend every of my best friend's wedding if I can, because, you know, those 5 years, I felt like I had to, you know, make up for them, you know, all the things that I missed, you know, which is pretty cool. And I think it was the first trip I made back home that actually, you know, just gave me the, you know, the confidence to say, you know what, I don't want to keep being in this hamster wheel, this rat race. And I remember coming back from Nigeria for the first time, and I had had so much, you know, such a great time with my siblings, my mom, you know, my old friends, and I couldn't get out of bed, you know, for the next couple of days. I was just like, I mean, do I want to keep doing this? I just bought, you know, some cars. I wanted to start a business, like do like tour rental at the time. And I was just like, I mean, I'm still kind of stuck here. Like, I go to work, I work really hard. I'm pretty darn good at what I do, which is sales. And I was just tapped out at that point. And it was in that month that I sold most of my things. I didn't have much. I just sold most of my things. I got rid of my car and I bought a one-way ticket to Mexico City. And that's the start of Nigeria. Yeah. I mean, I got back to the US and I was just disillusioned with everything, you know, it was such a high opening trip, and I'm still grateful for it. So, yeah, I mean, now that you are, you know, you're back home in Los Angeles, you're settled now. What's the next big move for you? What are you looking forward to doing in the future?
You know, I think a lot of my travels have shifted away from just traveling and living to more experience-based travel. which I'm really excited about. Right. Like, I think just, yeah, it just shifts. Like, as the, you know, when you first travel, Daniel, like you're in hostels or you're backpacking and like you move fast. You're one place to the next.
Absolutely.
Over time, you kind of slow down a little bit more. For me, that was my progression, like backpacking fast, slow down, start living in co-living places, then start living in Airbnbs and then started staying places for longer. I think just the type of travel you have shifts when the novelty wears off, or who knows. So right now I'm post in Los Angeles, still travel a lot. A lot of my travel is experience-based, like I said. So right now, just kind of adrenaline stuff. I got stranded on a desert island for 2 days. I got kidnapped on purpose. I motorcycled across Africa or East Africa. I lived with the hunter-gatherer tribe. So like a lot of adventure stuff I could find is kind of the mode where I am. And I will plan a trip around that versus just living and working. But there's always the nostalgia factor. You know, I'm like, damn, like maybe I should go post up in Chiang Mai for like 3 months and just live and relive the nomad life. Right? Like, there's always that part of it too.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I mean, I know, like, you know, family is, you know, really important to you. And I just, you know, you recently mentioned on your Twitter that, you know, you lost your dad, you know, which I can, you know, very much relate to. I mean, I lost my dad about 8 years ago, and it still feels like it happened like 8 days ago, you know? But I'm pretty sure, you know, they kind of had some type of knowledge about, you know, how you progressed, you know, from being a kid who worked in private equity and to this, you know, entrepreneur. You know, parents are some of the people that we feel very indebted to. Like, oh, we want to make them feel proud. And, I mean, I'm very much hoping that you did, but in your fair assessment, would you say that, you know, your parents are pretty much proud of where you are right now? And did you make them feel good at least? Because I still think about that personally. That's just something I'm very curious about with people.
Yeah, it's a good question. And for me, I think the answer is yes. And, you know, at least for my parents, I know because I asked them directly multiple times, especially my dad, because we knew it was coming.
That's awesome.
And I knew he was and felt genuine about it. And like my sister and I, a couple months before my dad passed, his main goal was he just wanted to pay off the house. And my sister and I, at the very end for Christmas, we paid off the house for him and my mom. So that was like a nice gift. And like we have an awesome picture and they're really proud of that. So that's something I feel happy I could give to him. Of course, like giving physical things, paying off a mortgage isn't really what they care about. They just care about seeing you grow. For the most part, I would like to think so, though. I would like to think my parents are proud of me, and I believe they were. How about for you, Daniel?
Oof, that's, I mean, oh man, you know, I mean, every time when I think about, you know, this, the one thing that I truly hope that, you know, when my dad looks back, I hope he's proud of me in some ways, but some days I just wish that I, you know, would have been more, mature, I guess, to have certain conversations, you know, with him. You know, we were very close, and I guess I just didn't take that opportunity because I guess partly because you look up to this person and you just feel like you're just in awe of them every time, such that you just hold them like in such high regard. And that's how it was for me with my dad. I mean, of course we would, you know, joke around and mess around, but I just wish that I would have been more more bold to have certain conversations and to just like be more candid in certain situations and just like get to the root of certain things, of certain feelings. But we just never had such deep, intimate conversations, mostly like, so of course I was younger. I can't really, you know, fault myself for that. And he had us, at least myself, my younger sister, when it was at, you know, very close to retirement. So, I mean, I guess I just felt sort of myself as a child. I can have some conversations with my dad, but looking back in hindsight, I just wish that I did, you know, but I hope that I have made him proud in every way possible. And that's just all I can hope for, really. But now I just take that opportunity to like educate people and just like be very candid with my close circle of friends who still have both of the parents, you know, to just take that opportunity to have some conversations now, because from my experience, I don't think it's pretty when you're looking back in 10 years and they're no longer here and you just wish you've had some conversations and talked about certain things. you know, that's just always my advice to people. You know, our parents, they're here now, you know, make the most of it is what I would say. You know, so yeah.
No, I love that, man. And I agree. And like, honestly, think this experience with my father, and like, I'm lucky in that we knew it was coming. I had all the conversations I wanted to. But how many people don't have that? Mm. Majority of people don't, either for a couple of reasons they don't get the chance to, or they're scared to. It's very common. Like, I think this would be 99% of people. But now it's made me realize, like, damn, for the people who are alive, why not just tell them, like, what you think about them, your thoughts, or whatever you want to say now. I had an idea. Want to write to my family and friends, like a note, which is almost like, if you were going to die tomorrow, this is what I'd want to say to you now. Right. And just send them the note. And at least I would never have any regret that I didn't say what I wanted to all these people. And why not? Like, the worst case, you feel a little bit awkward. Best case, your relationship gets so much better. Right. It's almost all upsides.
Yeah.
I still haven't done it, but it's something I definitely want to.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Now that you've said it, I think it would be on my list of things to do as well, because we just take it for granted. But yeah, I mean, that's such a nice conversation to have. But I just want to bring it full circle. You know, we started out talking, you know, business, which is what I always love to talk about, at least learn from people like yourself. And if you, you know, would say one thing to someone listening to this right now, you know, thinking about starting something and hopefully leads them into, you know, living a life of freedom, you know, life that allows them to be who they want to be, you know, travel, where that's, you know, whatever that is. What would you say to that person right now? Because I know you've gone through so much, had a lot of experience, and there's absolutely something that you may have taken away from that.
Yeah, I'll leave you guys with the story. I remember my first job in private equity. First
year. Awesome. This is what I love stories.
Yeah, this is what propelled me to, like, even though I had failures, to kind of keep going. There was a guy, his name was Paul. I'll call him Partner Paul. He was 52, 53. He was about to retire. And very lucrative career. Someone whispered in my ear, like, dude, Partner Paul has $20 million in the bank. And I remember thinking, like, oh my God, this guy's set. $20 million in early 50s. This guy's going to retire, go off into the sunset. This is the way to do life. 1 year after retired, he died of heart attack. Now, think about, like, the businesses that you are not starting because you're in analysis paralysis. Think about when things don't go right and you're like, you know what? Maybe let me just stick with the rat race. Let me just sacrifice 30 years and I'll reap the rewards later. We're running out of time. You're running out of time, right? Like, it's too risky to, like, defer enjoyment, defer happiness. We might as well try and do the hard work now for something you think you might like better than your current status quo. And really, I think a lot of people overestimate the risk of starting a business. It doesn't have to be risky. Do what Daniel's doing. Right? Do something small just to build that side income. And eventually it could be something great.
Yeah.
I think there's mostly upsides to starting a side hustle and keeping going. The biggest downside is you're losing time. Like, if you don't do this, you're sacrificing a lot and you might be Partner Paul.
Yeah, that's beautiful, man. And I think that's such a perfect way to bring it to a close. And I just want to say thank you so much again, Neil. I mean, I know I've been following you. I was stalking you, I guess, for quite a while. I just decided, you know what? I'm just going to ask, and hopefully, you know, it agrees to come on. And I really appreciate that. I really do. I mean, maybe at some point down the line in a year or two, bring you back, we'll talk about it and, you know, see where you are at that point, because I always love to follow up with people, you know, just see where things are, you know, at that point in time. So thanks again, man.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me on the podcast. And I love what you're doing over here at the podcast. Excited to subscribe and listen. So thanks so much for having me on.
Well, nomads and entrepreneurs, I hope you enjoy the conversation as much as I did. And if you did, I truly, really want to hear your feedback. So if you would not mind just taking a moment of your time, takes less than 30 seconds, hit the feedback button, give any star whatever you feel that a podcast deserves. I wouldn't expect anything less than 5 anyway. Let me know what you think. And it really helps to, you know, get this, you know, podcast up there in search and, you know, search rankings and discoverability. And I really want this podcast to do well. And I know you do too. So I thank you again for listening to this episode. If you have any questions, do not hesitate to reach out to me using the email. I'll leave it down in the show notes. And also check out Made This. I mean, Neil Parekh is up to some great things. When I learn how to do this, I recommend that you follow him on Twitter. And also hit me on Twitter as well. If Daniel did, did. And again, thank you for listening. I will see you, or I will talk to you, I should say, in the next episode. So you take care now. Bye.
Match believes that adults date better because when you date as an adult, you get to be a little irresponsible with really responsible people. Rip the clothes off someone who actually knows how to put them away. Fall stupidly in love with someone who's actually really smart. Forget being hot. Get them to ugly laugh. Ready to crush on someone who makes you feel whole? If you know who you are and what you want in a relationship, Match is the place for you. Adults wanted. Download the Match app today. Match believes that adults date better. Because when you date as an adult, you get to be a little irresponsible with really responsible people. Rip the clothes off someone who actually knows how to put them away. Fall stupidly in love with someone who's actually really smart. Forget being hot. Get them to ugly laugh. Ready to crush on someone who makes you feel whole? If you know who you are and what you want in a relationship, Match is the place for you. Adults wanted. Download the Match app today.